Hi, this is Lisa, and you are listening to I Love That Movie. This podcast is for movie lovers. It's not an unbiased opinion. It's not a straightforward review. It's just a couple people talking about a movie that they love. The format is each week I have a guest, and that guest and I discuss a movie that they love, something they're obsessed with, something they connect with. We'll talk about the plot, the director, and the actors, but we'll also talk about the personal connection my guest has with that movie. So if that sounds like something you want to listen to, keep listening. This is Lisa, and if you want to catch up with me on Twitter, you can find me at ILTN Podcast, or I should say X. I say that every week. One of these days, I'll say the right word for it. Also on Instagram at I Love That Movie Podcast, and we have a Patreon. The show is always free, but if you want to support us on there, you can. That's at patreon.com/ILoveThatMovie. And if you like what you hear today, please subscribe and rate the show. It does help new listeners find us. I have a returning guest. Haven't heard you on the podcast in a while, though, Josh. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
Doing well. We've done episodes on, was it Aliens? We all did together, like as a group, a while back.
Oh my God. That was like episode one.
Yeah.
I think that was like the last time I was on. Was...
Well, you're back.
What year was that, by the way?
I don't even know. It has to be like 2019 or 2018, something like that.
Okay.
It was like before COVID.
Man,
COVID that times. Was
forever ago.
It really was. And it was like live and in person. That was fun though. But you're back. I think we did Alien and then Aliens and then you're picking a new movie this week. And what movie is that?
It is The Road Warrior. And I believe that I've been talking about wanting to do this movie on your podcast for since episode one, your very first episode, and finally getting around to it.
I've staunchly refused.
Fault.
I'm just yeah, kidding.
I hate all of the Mad Max movies.
So. No. I live with a Mad Max super fan. That's Nick. In fact, both of y'all have been the Road Warrior at conventions.
Yeah, we were the Road Warrior together and got into lots of adventures.
Yeah, some we won't discuss here. if you haven't heard this podcast before, my guest picks the movie and then we talk about it basically. It's usually, well, I want it to be a movie they love. And so that makes it fun to discuss. But this week we're discussing Mad Max 2, otherwise known as The Road Warrior. This came out in 1981. And we are not a spoiler-free podcast. So if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, I've never seen that before, this is your opportunity to pause, watch it, and come back. But if you're still here, here is the synopsis that I got off of Wikipedia. After avenging the death of his wife and young son at the hands of a vicious gang leader, Max drives the post-apocalyptic highways of the Australian outback, fending off attacks from nomadic tribes that prey on outsiders. Falling into an encampment led by the relatively peaceful Mike Preston, or Papagallo, is that how you say it?
Maybe. It's so hard to remember. Like
remember their names.
They don't say people's names in the movie ever,
okay.
Or really, except for Max.
Okay.
It's hard to, or a couple of the good guys in the refinery. Like I don't even remember what all their names are.
Okay. Well, we'll just say this. Falling into an encampment led by the relatively peaceful guy, Max at first schemes to steal their oil, but soon becomes the group's reluctant defender against the hulking Humongous and his ruthless marauders. So yeah, that's essentially what happens, but we will talk a lot more about that. So Josh, when did you first watch this movie?
I want to say I was about 12 or 13. I remember exactly like how we watched it and everything, but I used to spend my summers in Nebraska with my grandparents and my mom. And we would usually split time between like my grandparents' house, which was like an hour away from my mom's house. And so I was at my grandparents' house. My uncle was over and he asked me if I had ever seen any of the Mad Max movies. And I said no. And so my grandparents, of all people, were like, oh, they're so crazy. We have to go. We have to go get these and watch all of them.
Wow. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was in for until like after I watched these. And I'm like, why are my grandparents want to watch these?
It's kind of violent suggestion from your grandparents.
It was surprising. I didn't really know anything about it. They just told me, they're like, oh, they're great. They're, as you get through, you know, 1, 2, and 3, you just see, you know, the world get crazier and crazier each movie. And so we went to the local tiny video store that they had. They had them all on VHS. So we rented them, watched all of them. And I'm a fan of all of the Mad Max movies. And the reason I picked Road Warrior for this podcast is that one definitely had the biggest impact on me. Even as a kid, when we watched all three of them, I was just to me, end to end, a perfect movie. And nice. I was obsessed with it. And then I was also like, yeah, why are my grandparents into this? It's so strange. I had no idea. But
that's so interesting.
But yeah, it would have been like the late 90s is when I saw it. I would, 12, 13.
Wow. Impressionable age.
Oh, yeah.
So this came out in 1981, and that makes sense. You saw it in VHS. I think the first time I saw this was probably with Nick as an adult. Yeah.
Was that when we were planning our costumes? And
probably, yeah. Like, Nick, you know, he loves post-apocalyptic movies, I would say. Like, and he loves, like, cyberpunk and, you know, things like that.
So, Fallout,
like, yeah. So he like introduced me to this, and I was kind of a brat about it. I was like, I'm not going to like this. Like right off the bat, I was like, I don't like this kind of stuff. But then I watched it with him and I really liked it. I was like, oh, I've been kind of, you know, too hard on this genre as a whole. And like, there's a lot here. So I'm proud to say I like it now. And so I saw it, I guess, on DVD or on streaming, but not in 1981. So, you know, this will be an interesting conversation between two opposite ends of the spectrum. But I did want to share a couple of quick facts that I had about the film. The first one being that Mel Gibson only has 16 lines of dialogue in the entire film.
and multiple of them are something like I'm just here for the gasoline or something.
Yeah. I only came for the gasoline.
Oh yeah.
I feel like that's such a trademark of like 80s and 90s action heroes, is like being a man of few words. I feel like maybe that started with, I don't know, like Clint Eastwood or something, but back in the day. But I feel like especially in the 80s and 90s, like very masculine main characters that don't say a lot, but they do.
Yeah, that
commit a lot of violence.
that does make sense. I was wondering because I actually didn't think of it that way. But I kept looking at the movie, and I've read a lot of people say the same thing too. That I mean, the movie could easily work as a silent film. I mean, the plot is so straightforward and everything, and it really doesn't really need a lot of explanation. They do such a good job visually of showing you, you know, everything that's happening, and it's, you know, it's not a rocket science type of story, but it easily, I mean, if they had, I mean, I don't know if there were the circumstances around how all the circumstances around how the movie was made, but yeah, it easily could have made it a silent movie and it would have made perfect sense.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Like, I guess because I hadn't watched this in a while, I didn't remember that there were so few lines of dialogue, but it really makes sense why in Fury Road, which is kind of more clear in my memory, I think, than this movie sometimes, but, you know, the Max doesn't speak a lot. And it's like, well, I guess he never did.
So yeah.
Makes sense. The second thing I had is that the dog used in the film, whose name simply Dog, was obtained from a local pound, trained to perform in the film. And because of the sound engines upset him, He was fitted with special earplugs, and after filming was complete, he was adopted by one of the camera operators.
That's so sweet.
What a huge risk to take with an animal actor, too, to like just pick one up in the pound.
And I wonder if it's just because the movie scene. I don't know if it was just not very big in Australia or their budget, but I'm like the dog character, because I've heard that same thing too, where they adopted a dog and kind of haphazardly trained him to be in the movie. But I was wondering if there just wasn't either, you know, a trained dog available, or if the dog was written in last minute or something. I have no idea, but I also did hear about the earplugs. I always, every time I would see him like in the car, I just imagine his little pup earplugs, somebody putting in his little pup earplugs. They said he was terrified and would like pee and stuff if it was too loud. Poor dog.
Poor thing. Yeah, I mean, the vehicles in this are very loud. So that kind of makes sense. Well, we could talk a little bit about the director of this movie, who is, what's his name?
George Miller.
Yeah. George Miller.
Yeah.
I was like, why did that
very interesting filmography career.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like a lot of different films under his belt that you wouldn't necessarily put in the same category as Mad Max, but yeah, he does a really good job, obviously, and has a new movie coming out soon. So,
yeah, very excited for that one too. But yeah, his filmography is just, it's bizarre.
Yeah, I loved Babe. I mean, I'll say that as a kid, I absolutely adored that movie. So,
didn't he direct? I actually didn't look this up before. I should have looked it up. Didn't he direct Lorenzo's Oil too?
Let me look right now at his filmography, and with the magic of editing, it will seem like I just looked it up. Oh no, it's right here, Lorenzo's Oil. Yeah, that was
he
back
did a bunch of 1992 movies.
Truly, yeah, but the one probably that I remember the most, other than this one, is Babe, and then Happy Feet. I remember my uncle called Happy Feet Crappy Feet. He didn't like
Crappy Feet. Oh, that's really funny.
I'm like, that's awful. But yeah, so he's had a very interesting filmography. And then also, as far as the cast goes, to be 100% honest, Mel Gibson's probably the only one I recognize. I don't know about you, if you recognize a few names from it or not.
Oh, not really. Yeah, I was trying to think. I know I forgot the name of the actor who plays the gyrocopter captain. I've seen him in stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everyone else, Mel Gibson was really the breakout the only one I really remembered. Because he's the only one who really got famous off of those movies.
Right, like I feel like it's the charm of these movies is they kind of are like a lower budget action flick.
Yeah.
It's just like a really, really good idea. And yeah, I imagine this is what propelled Mel Gibson to fame, because I mean, he is super young, especially in the first one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was definitely original Mad Max definitely the combination. Yeah. Mad Max and Road Warrior that really made him take off.
Yeah. Well, since we don't know a lot of the other actors, we'll kind of go on, I guess, to the, some of your favorite scenes from the movie.
Well, the one that always sticks out to me is, at the very end of the movie, you know, you have the big car chase, and there are so many, you know, amazing car chases in movies, and that the scene with the tanker is just so iconic, you know, it's just been borrowed and used for so many other movies, satires, parodies, just everything. It's just tons of stuff was inspired by that chase scene. And you know, a lot of people talk about famous movie car chases like Blues Brothers, Vanishing Point, Bullet, you know, all these. But Road Warrior is just the coolest chase scene ever. Especially favorite scene of all time is probably at the very end where Lord Humongous is kits his nitrous on his car to try to run into the ATR, to the big rig, and they run into each other, and the car just shatters into a bazillion pieces. And it's just so funny. Just the comedic timing in that movie is just, it's so funny. And just over the top ridiculous. And I want to say that one of my favorite scenes was very early on in the beginning. And it was the one my grandparents actually told me. They were like, oh yeah, this is going to be, they were like, get ready for this. It's so funny. But at the beginning, when Mad Max runs up to the, runs into that 18 wheeler with, and he's filling up with gasoline, and they have the standoff with some of the biker gang. But he opens the door to the big rig, and some like bloated dead body falls out of it. It comes out of nowhere. It was really funny. Just again, like the movie is pretty serious, but it's so goofy in certain ways, and just like the right way. It's I don't know how else to really describe it, but
I think
it's a very funny movie.
Right. I think that's why it appealed to you at a younger age too, is like, it's got these like kind of serious action themes, but it's like fun enough to where it's enjoyable. Like someone young could like get on board. I was thinking while you were talking about how, like, what was my first exposure to this genre? Why did I have like the opinion that I had? And I think it's because I didn't watch The Road Warrior or the original one. I watched a bunch of knockoffs. I feel like this movie was so popular, and in some ways, other than like the giant explosions, could be relatively low budget because it's just like in the desert and like they're just kind of wearing like found gear and things like that. So like, in theory, you could kind of make a pretty cheap knockoff, and I saw a bunch of those. And so I think that's why I didn't know what they stemmed from. One that stood out to me the most is there was this movie called The Bronx Executioner.
Oh yeah.
That we watched, and it's really bad. But if you look at pictures of it, it's not even about the same thing. Like, it's supposed to be about a cyborg, but if you look up like pictures from it, it kind of looks Mad Max-ish because they, you know, just the way they styled the characters. So that's why I think I thought of those movies first and not this one. But when I was watching this, like, I was thinking that a lot of the scenes in this are really, to me, now I could be remembering these wrong. That's why I'm kind of asking you, the expert. But this is kind of the template for Fury Road, right? Is it? It feels like it's most like this one.
Almost, yeah. Almost the same story, just blown up way bigger with way more money. The kind of the template near the end of the movie where it's, you know, you have a big vehicle being chased by a bunch of other vehicles. It's that's what George Miller, I guess, with this movie, because this was the first one that had that kind of that blueprint. Because the first one, it was just police cars chasing other cars, and then this one, they were like, we're gonna get this big rig, and it's gonna be chased with a bunch of improvised weird other vehicles. And they did the exact same thing in Fury Road, just with an absurd budget and a lot more crazy cars.
Yeah, and a lot more characters too.
Yeah, I was thinking too, when you talked about how you had seen more of the knockoffs and stuff before, you saw this one. I actually, my very first Mad Max or piece of Mad Max content that I saw as a kid, and I had no idea what it was referencing or even that it was a reference to anything, was when I was a kid, I was really into that CGI show Reboot that was shown on ABC back in the early 90s. Now that I'm thinking about it, there is a more interesting story about it, but to me at least. So there was an episode of the show called Bad Bob that was essentially the concept of the show Bob, was
like Mad Max. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. The concept of the show is that a game would come into their, they all lived in a computer, and everybody, there was a CGI show, everybody lived in a computer, and then every once in a while the user would insert a game, and then they would get brought into the game and have to beat the user in order to not be murdered. funny for a kid's show, but they did an episode of the show. And then there was an episode of the show called Bad Bob that was essentially, the video game was Road Warrior, where they were all chasing, they were chasing a Megabyte, who was the bad guy, the main bad guy of the show, got transformed into a big, like, big rig. And so they were all chasing him on Mad Max cars and stuff. And the interesting thing about that was definitely the first piece of Mad Max related anything that I ever saw. I had no idea what it was, but I later learned that the one of the artists who worked on that show, apparently he did some interview years after. I mean, where apparently after they made the episode, he was obsessed with Mad Max, apparently, like really, really big super fan, and would send George Miller like fan letters and stuff. But apparently he mailed an episode or a copy of the episode to George Miller, who at some point actually watched it. And this guy's name was Brendan McCarthy, by the way. And so apparently he liked it and reached out to him. And so they started talking about Fury Road. Well, at the time, was not called Fury Road. And this is like back in the, I want to, probably the early 2000s or late 90s. I'd have to look that up again. But he actually like brought him out, had interviews with him. And he actually is credited with co-writing Fury Road.
Oh my god, that's a really cool story. I did not know that.
All these fandoms I was into, I was just kind of turned in on each other. I had no idea. So that was really cool. I'm favorite cartoon show or when I was a kid, and favorite movie series all kind of tied together later on. And
well, there's one more franchise I feel like that this has needs to thank this movie, and that's Aliens. I mean, I feel like the feral child is like the template for Newt.
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that. That's funny.
Like, because Aliens came out in, like, 86, and this was 81. I don't know, like, their look is kind of similar. I mean, she's not feral, but it just kind of reminds me of that theme of, like, you know, in the second one, I guess, they're making the character a little bit more family-oriented, and I feel like they kind of did that with Sigourney Weaver's character, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could absolutely see that. And in the 80s, there was that, you know, obsession with like sewer children and like
I don't know what that was about. It was either that or the mob. It felt like every movie had the mob in it somehow. It's like, what, this is unnecessary, but yeah.
I don't know what other movies could have had a character like that, but Mad Max is probably the earliest one that I can think of that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And I mean, it really goes off the rails with like the feral children in like the third one, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The third one. Yeah.
There visually there's things I like about the third one though.
Oh, there are tons of, I love, I love a lot of a part. It just kind of meanders later on, but, and I think the last time we saw that was when we went to the trilogy showing at the Draft House, and
yes,
you know, by the end when it does start meandering like that, you're like, I've already been here for like 6 hours, and
that's true.
But yeah, there. About that. The third one, interesting from what I read, wasn't even written as a Mad Max movie, and then George Miller had somebody somebody it was related or it was a friend, I forgot, who died, and so he didn't handle a lot of the direction. I guess he only directed the action scenes in the third one.
Oh, interesting.
Which makes sense why it's a little more disjointed than the other ones. But
it's kind of like the third one started to sort of forget what we liked about that first one. But like by the time we get Fury Road, like obviously that's much closer to the original while still being visually very different, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just amped everything up from Road Warrior and they just took that exact same template and ran with it, which I love.
Is there a connection between Humongous and any other characters, or is he just like the bad of this movie? I can't remember.
Well, again, it's interesting to me. Not sure who else. Because I know as a kid, I was like, there's this, you know, this weird character. They're showing that, you know, he's clearly, you know, been, you know, radicalized by the wasteland, really. And he's, you know, all burned up and stuff. And I thought it was an interesting, you know, the just kind of mysterious character. You really don't know about his origin or anything, but they actually did intend to make him, or to tie him into another character, like an actual named character from the first movie. And so in the first movie, Mad Max has a partner named Jim Goose, who dies in the movie, or it suggested that he's either like, I forgot, it's been so long since I've seen the first one, but I remember you see like his burned up body, but he gets run off the road by one of the gangs, and they set his car on fire, and then you see like a part of his like burned hand or something later in the movie. And what they had intended when they were initially making Road Warriors, that Humongous was supposed to be his old partner.
Oh, like, and come back, that's and why be they the bad guy?
Showed him. Yeah, exactly. Because that was why he was supposed to be all burned up, because he got burned up in the first movie and all that. And so it was supposed to be him versus his old buddy. But they decided not to go that route, really, because I guess George Miller thought that not enough people had seen the original Mad Max to know that there was that connection, which is why in the U.S., you know, they didn't call it Mad Max 2. They just called it The Road Warrior, which actually confused me as a kid when I was...
It confused me looking this up. So the thing is, I guess Americans hadn't really seen that first one, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
This is like their first introduction? Oh,
it wasn't like super widely released. And I guess they just weren't confident that, yeah, enough people had seen it.
That makes sense. They're like, this is a really good idea. But what if we give you a budget, you make another one? And so in doing so, he like kind of rewrites a little bit of it, doesn't tie it too much to the first one, so that newbies can come in with fresh eyes. Okay, I think I probably knew that at one time and forgot that fact. That's interesting. What are some other scenes that you really liked from the movie?
Oh, none of them. It's a terrible movie. I'm just
terrible.
The scene with the feral kid where he's throwing his razor boomerang, and he kills the guy's lover, boyfriend, or whatever. But the one where I forgot the name of the character, but he's like the announcer who talks for Humongous when they're sitting outside the little refinery base. But when he throws it and the guy tries to catch it and he chops all his fingers off, and then his entire all his friends and everything are just laughing at him. I was like, man, your friends suck.
Yeah.
But intense. I guess that's how it is in the wastelands. And
yeah, I mean, these movies really, like you said, visually, they like influenced a lot of films going forward. It's like when you think of desert wasteland, you think of this, or like there's that event that our friend Jesse goes to every year, the Wasteland Weekend. It's like,
oh yeah,
I just think of stuff like this.
I remember when we were making these Mad Max costumes and stuff, I was like, oh, now I have to go to Wasteland Weekend and everything. But yeah, this movie definitely solidified. Were there movies before that had that same sort of desert style, or did Road Warrior really kind of cement that type of like biker leather, you know, wasteland type of look?
The only thing I can think of is like those Death Wish movies, but they were not apocalyptic.
Yeah.
But it was like a kind of a similar ish plot of like somebody's family is attacked, and then that person becomes like this kind of wandering vigilante. I feel like that was kind of the first thing like that, but then Road Warrior is refreshing because it's not taking any sort of, like, the first Death Wish, I'm just going to be honest, has some problems, because in retrospect, it's kind of racist, and I don't know, if you watch it, it's pretty intense. But I think with Wasteland, or with Road Warrior, it's removed from anything like that. It's not taking like a specific place. I mean, even though it's in Australia, it's more of like a fantasy version of like what happened to this guy. And then, you know, it's a similar thing too. I think the in Death Wish he was a cop, but I can't really remember exactly. But I guess that was probably the first thing like that.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
I think the only other thing I could think of where they had, you know, gang, and it wasn't really Wasteland, but where they had gangs with these kind of, you know, ratty, weird, homemade looking, you know, Wasteland ish outfits were, you know, like something like the Warriors. But
yeah, I love
there
movie.
Wasn't really much else I could think of before that. That, like, I mean, this movie definitely, like, laid down, like, this is your Wasteland template. This is what your outfits were going to look like in the Wasteland. So,
interestingly, Mad Max came out in 1979, and so did the Warriors.
Oh, really? Oh, the first one did.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that is interesting. I guess they didn't. Who knows how, if they copied anything from each other.
I feel like something happens certain years where everyone is getting influenced by similar things. And it's like, not so much that they're copying each other, but that it kind of speaks to the time and like the aesthetic of the time. I mean, I think maybe there was a lot of fear in the 70s around like youths,
yeah,
urban stuff, gangs. Yeah. Like, I think because of what was going on at that time, it kind of started to bleed into like fantasy as well. But The Warriors is another great movie. I would totally talk about that one too. I love it. But yeah, interesting. Okay, this is kind of a different kind of question, but what about this movie specifically, like the aesthetic of it, or like what do you think like pulled you into these films so much?
It was definitely the cars. I'd always been into car movies when I was a kid, and by this point, by the time I watched it, you know, 12 or 13, my big movie car, this was like a passing of the torch moment for like child me. Cause I was like the golden, like my absolute favorite, you know, movie car was always the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Heck yeah.
And I was obsessed with that car. But then when I saw Road Warrior, Mad Max's car, I was like, I want this car. Like, this is the coolest looking thing I've ever seen. It's just so badass. And so the cars, the really kind of run down homemade, you know, nature of all these crazy vehicles, that's what really, really sucked me in. And then the fact that movie, I mean, was made in 1981 with no CGI, and you just see all these cars driving around everywhere. And it just looks, it's visually just very impressive to watch. You just get a great sense of scale and everything.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask you a dumb question. What kind of car does he drive?
It's a Ford Falcon, okay. Which we don't have in the US. And they had actually, when they were making this movie, they wanted it might have been the first movie too. I don't recall. I know the first movie was made like same amount of money as like a Diet Coke or something. It was made for like no money, but they were wanting to, for his car, they were actually wanting to use a Ford Mustang, but I guess they couldn't afford to import one for the movie, so they ended up using a Ford Falcon, which is an Australian kind of like a Ford Mustang. But I thought it was fascinating because that car is just, it's so unique to that movie. And since we don't, you know, have that specific car in the US, you know, it just looks very exotic and very, just very memorable because it's just something you don't see every day. And
when you say that, do you mean like the way the engine is like on the outside of the car?
That part was, that part's not real. Quote unquote, the big supercharger, but just the actual like the silhouette, the body of the car. It's just not a car that we have in the U.S. So it to me was interesting, just because I, as a kid going, you know, I don't recognize this car.
I've never seen it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you for explaining that. As somebody that doesn't know a lot about cars, sometimes when car people say, man, this car is really cool, I'm always curious. I'm like, what about it? So that really helped.
Yeah. Of course. And so the thing you're talking about that sticks out of the engine sticking out of the hood, that's supposed to be a supercharger, which is something you bolt onto your engine that'll force more air into the engine and makes more power. But Interestingly, in the movie, there's several times where he has like a switch to, because the supercharger and a car is, it's driven by a belt that's connected to your engine. When your engine's running, this belt's turning, and the faster you go, the faster this belt turns, the more air it's sucking in. It's several times in the movie. There's a point he has a switch that'll turn it off, which is not something that you can do with an actual supercharger.
Oh, really?
As a car person, I find it very funny. But and when they were filming the movie, they even said that too. They were like, "We wanted this to like be like a cool gadget, even though that we know that it's not gonna, that's not something that exists in real life." So they said that they would show them like switching it on and off. They were actually just starting and stopping the engine of the car.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Wow. Thank you for that explanation. That's very helpful.
Oh, no problem.
I was looking again through like some of the quick facts, and you know, I was talking about movies that it may have influenced. Apparently, James Cameron said that this is one of his influences behind the Terminator. And in Terminator 2, John Connor's dog is actually named Max.
Oh yeah, his name was Max. I did not make that connection at all.
No, that's, I mean, I didn't watch The Terminator and think this movie, but that's very cool. Love that.
I guess it taught us, or I guess showed that you can make a crazy movie with not very much money.
That's true. And also futuristic, you know?
Yeah.
Very cool. There was another thing that I saw. Contributing to the cost of production, it was the most expensive set ever constructed for an Australian film. The desert compound built in the desert of Broken Hill, New South Wales, Australia. The producer also boasted the largest explosion ever created for an Australian film, which destroyed the above set. Wow.
They did a great job blowing that set up, though. But yeah, that set's so cool. I mean,
I know.
As far as what's really cool specifically about how, you know, the fact that they built all that is, you know, they have all these shots of cars, you know, just going all around it, all inside the compound and everything too. And you can just see these like long tracking shots and see that everything is real and that all exists. And
yeah,
it's very immersive. A lot of that stuff, I mean, it's constructed, you know, where they use like a bus as their door. And everything. It's just stuff that you could actually see, you could imagine would be practical in, you know, a wasteland type of apocalypse environment. It's other than, you know, wasting gas by shooting flamethrowers and stuff. And
you know, I just thought of another influence that I wasn't super crazy about, but was also post-apocalyptic. Do you remember the Chronicles of Riddick?
Oh yeah, like Pitch Black.
The first one was called Pitch Black. Yeah, I remember like being like meh on that. So that's why I would make like assumptions. I'm like, oh, I don't like that in this other awful movie that came out. And I was like, I must not like this genre at all, which is just silly. And like I'm not trying to put this genre down or anything like that. I'm sharing it because I think sometimes we get an idea about an entire genre based on one or two examples, and we need to remember that there's many examples often, and like, don't let that stop you from, you know, discovering something new, basically.
Oh yeah. Very true.
Yeah. But you're right. I think you were saying that the world that George Miller created was very immersive, and, you know, you can tell it has like a big budget, and it's very interesting and kind of inspiring. And I do feel like that's like one hallmark of his movies. And part of why I liked Fury Road so much is like, it really does feel like he does do a really great job with the sets. And obviously, you know, like you mentioned before, this is pre-CGI in 1981, and yet it looks so good. And like, I think I'm kind of a sucker for real effects. So completely agree with you there.
Yeah, it's super cool. I mean, the fact that they're able to build all that, build all these insane cars, and, you know, film in the middle of the desert, really,
yeah.
And it's just very, very unique, and I think what helps it be a lot more immersive too is there, again, like we were talking about, there's not very much dialogue, so you don't have these like really long exposition dumps or anything.
Very true.
You just you kind of, you know, make your own assumptions and make your own story around, you know, the how they got to this point exactly and everything, and then like they don't it's a lot of showing, not telling.
Yeah. I feel too, like, in the same way that Star Wars is very, you know, obviously it's in space, but they ground it with using items from our world, right? That are oftentimes kind of retro or nostalgic, like, especially in all the Star Wars movies. Like, if you really break down, like, their outfits and their weapons, there's stuff that, you know, from our world, right? Like, there's that funny machine that's actually just like an ice cream machine, and like the lightsaber hilts were like camera equipment, and you know, stuff like that. And I feel like that's such a good way to like make something that is futuristic or is kind of like outside of our experience feel so grounded. And that's probably another reason why these movies, like you said, they don't have to give you a bunch of explanation. They just like give you kind of visual hints about what might be going on, and like almost by not giving you all the information makes it more mysterious and interesting, but relatable enough to where you can kind of fill in the gaps yourself.
Yeah. Cause you know, sometimes when you have a movie with an interesting visual or something, and when they try to go a little too far in explaining it, and you're like, well, that sounds stupid.
Yeah. Like they're like, oh, 100 years ago, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, eyes are glazing over. Cause like, it's not realistic anyway. Like we don't need it to make perfect sense.
Yeah. At the beginning, they're like there was a war, there's no oil, you know, everything shut down, and just fill in the blanks yourself.
Yeah. It's like, we don't know if it was like we know it's a war. We don't know if they're, what other reasons or what the war was about, or you just know that things suck now and oil is scarce. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
And that's good enough. Yeah. What's the name of the guy that has like all the feathers on him and the red mohawk?
Oh,
or does he have a name? You might've been
alluding
to that
three
earlier.
Letter. It's like some, like three letter name, they're like the main sort of antagonist besides.
Yeah.
Humongous. Yeah. Very, very funny character. I don't remember the name though.
Their names aren't that important.
I don't think they they might, if they say his name, it's probably only like once in the movie. I've seen this movie a million times. I never remember.
But he kind of reminds me of like the War Boys.
Oh, Wes. I knew it was a three letter name.
Wes.
Okay.
Nice.
But the character is just so over the top. That's like all the crazy eye looks he gives are just so funny. And especially at the end of the movie when he jumps up on when Max sends the feral kid to go get the shotgun shell, and he pops up over the hood and right before they crash into Humongous. But it's just so over the top funny.
Yeah. I also think that Mad Max's entire look like is very iconic, like the sawed off shotgun and the brace, which is like one carryover from the first movie, but like if you didn't watch the first movie you wouldn't know how he hurt his leg, but you don't really
or why Max is mad even.
Yeah, that's true. We don't even know why he's mad. Why is he so mad? Yeah, you have to watch the first one to know that, but regardless, he just comes across as like this cool guy wearing all leather with, you know, the leg brace and the gun, and it's just neat.
Yeah,
you don't even need all the other stuff.
Yeah, the costume was perfection. Like, really, really. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to like imagine them putting this together, you know, and not knowing that it's going to be this, you know, iconic look that, you know, 40 years on, like people still vividly remember.
Yeah, I was reading too that like that Mel Gibson influenced some of the look too, like the little nick in his eyebrow and stuff like that, like kind of making him look more rough from the first one.
Oh, nice. Oh, I guess they weren't going hard enough for him as far as
I guess so. Or maybe he just wanted to have some influence. Who knows? Or maybe he made that up. I actually don't know. But
that makes sense.
Yeah. I remember when y'all were putting those costumes together too. That was really fun.
Yeah, I unfortunately, I burned stuff out of Mad Max during that endeavor, because I was watching this movie like all the time. Because Nick and I were really like trying to be accurate. So he has like a bunch of tools all over his outfit. Which when we were looking up like what all the tools were, we're like, oh, it actually makes sense. Like one of them was this weird thing. It was also funny because I was telling Steph, I was like, I need more pictures of Max's butt so I can see all the tools he has on his back. But he has stuff like, he's got like wrenches and knives, and one of them was this weird thing. And both Nick and I were like, what the hell is this? And it was a tool, I guess, that is native to Australia and is used to open. And it was some weird, Nick actually made one because we couldn't find them or find the real ones. He made like a cast one that he gave me a copy, or he gave me one of the ones he made. But it was like it's meant for opening fire extinguisher or fire hydrants in Australia, which I was like, that makes sense to have, you know, in the apocalypse. You know, if you run into a bush, fire hydrant, you can open it up. It's
seems like lots of things were flammable.
You're gonna want water. It's
y'all went hard. Yeah.
Yeah. We identified every little piece of that costume. And so it's hard. Yeah. Going back sometimes and just watching it, you know, for the fun of it. Cause I was like, oh yeah, I'm not in research mode anymore.
That's really cool.
You're not putting that outfit on and rolling around on the patio outside to scuff up the leather. And
you have to be cosplay. Dedicated. Yeah. Yeah, I remember Nick, like, one of the memories of him wearing that outfit is we went to Alamo. I think it was for like that Michael Jackson Thriller party that they used to have around Halloween.
Oh yeah, we were like, why are you Mad Max?
And Nick was like dancing around, and the little wrench was swinging around. I remember this like mom grabbing her kid like, let's get out of here. Like, I guess because like his outfit, like if you don't know what it's from, it just looks like some random guy with leather and like spikes and tools. It's
just some weird kind of fetish stuff.
Yeah, it was funny. But yeah, what any other scenes that we haven't mentioned, or any other quick or any other facts that we haven't gone over? I know it's not, like you said, it's a really good movie, but it's mostly action scenes. Are there any action scenes we haven't discussed yet?
Well, it was near the end of the movie when they another kind of anecdote about, I guess, how dangerous it was making the movie. But was a crash scene where there's a character. It's kind of a funny crash where a character a car crashes. He's on like a motorcycle and he hits the car and flies off the motorcycle, which was supposed to happen. He was supposed to hit the car, fly over the car after, and then, you know, land on the ground. But apparently he accidentally like hit his legs on the car and started like,
oh my gosh,
and tumbled in a very distinct looking man. Like when you see the crash scene, it honestly looks fake, like because he just starts tumbling end over end. But apparently that wasn't supposed to happen. And I guess he broke his leg or pretty badly. And yeah, it was really, really injured. And everything, but it looked so nuts they just kept it in the movie and ran with it.
I guess with his blessing. I also read too that like one of, maybe it was that particular stunt, but there was a stunt that was so dangerous they were like, don't eat anything because for like 12 hours,
really?
Because if you get injured, we'll take you straight to the hospital. It's like, oh, wow.
Oh man.
Anticipating his possible need to go to the hospital. So
yeah, all the car jump. I mean, even I know that they're not, you know, going, you know, 100 miles an hour down the freeway, but that's still, you have like, you know, dozens of these, moving vehicles and everything. Mm-hmm. It's just got to be logistically so difficult to keep all that together. And I mean, because there was a scene where they like grab, I don't know if this was, I'd have to look up to see if that was on purpose or not, but it was just so nuts looking where they like grappling hook one of the cars grappling hooks the truck at the end of the movie. And then it like screws up and the truck starts pulling the car, and it like the car like flips over, and then that's just being drug all over the place and flipping, and I was like, it looks really violent. And I'm wondering, were there people in that car when they were doing this? And or
yeah.
Was this supposed to happen? And just another one of those where they're like, oh, well, I didn't expect that to happen, but it looks awesome. So
yeah, they're like, it looks cool, so it's fine.
Yeah, just all these cars just brushing up against this big semi, and it just seems so dangerous.
Truly, truly.
But I think that it just adds to the stakes in the movie. It's so intense just because you know that all of these things are, you know, actually happening. These cars are running into each other and crashing and jumping over stuff and everything. And oh yeah. I did think of one other weird thing that I thought was funny. When they were filming the gyrocopter stuff, you know, they used an actual gyrocopter to fly around. And there was a scene where Mad Max is taking this gasoline or diesel to the tanker so he can take the tanker back to, you know, to the refinery so they can escape with the gasoline. But there's a scene where he runs into the gyrocopter captain again, and he flies him to the tanker. And there's a scene that it's really, really quick. They show the both of them in the gyrocopter flying, and then that's it. But apparently the gyrocopter can't carry two people. Like, weight-wise, two people would be too heavy to do it. So they made a doll and like, just kind of, like, strapped it into another seat to make it look like it was Mel Gibson in there, too. And
that's funny. Do you feel like you can tell in that scene, or no?
It's so quick. You really couldn't tell. And you can only see it from the back. So, I mean, they did it on purpose. They filmed it that way on definitely on purpose, so you really couldn't tell. But really, the only way you could even guess is, I mean, you could see that this individual is not moving at all.
That's pretty funny. Well, that's pretty cool. Okay. Well, if that was kind of the last couple of big things that you had, I guess I could ask you the last two questions then.
Yeah.
And they are, first one is, you've kind of summarized it, and I've even dug into like a little bit about why, but if you had to summarize, why do you think you keep coming back to this movie? Why do you love it so much?
I just like seeing all of the, you know, the practical effects, all the really creative sets and vehicles, costumes. It's you know, the movie's not very long. It's pretty brisk. You know, there's not really, don't have to put a lot of thought into it. You know, it's just a very fun movie. I love the visual style of it, the desert apocalypse and everything, and all the, you know, rat rods and cars and stuff that they made for it. And it's just, yeah, very kind of just a very tightly paced action movie that I like too. It's
absolutely, well, if you had to pitch it, which it could be similar to what you just said there, but what would you tell someone that hasn't seen it before?
I would say, let's see how, yeah, it's, if I was trying to get someone to watch it, I'd just say, you know, older movie, you know, so everything in the movie is real. That's, you see a lot of cool cars, you have some neat outfits, interesting outfits, I'll say. It's just kind of, yeah, crazy, goofy take about the apocalypse. And
yeah, I think you nailed it. Awesome. Well, thank you again, Josh, for coming on, and appreciate having you back, and hope to have you back soon.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Hopefully it won't be another 5 years. That was my fault. That was all my fault, by the way. I kept saying, I want to do this movie, and then never following up. And we'd like going on vacations and be like, when we're done with this, I need to record this movie, and then not follow up again. And
that's okay. But, door's always open.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for having me.
For sure.